and very lucid. So we are now at the question point. Yes, Alon has.
Alon Harel from the Hebrew University. Actually, I have two questions. One has to do with, I think it was you that mentioned that it is very difficult to go back to life. Is it internal difficulty, or do you find difficulty in finding, like, external difficulties, like finding a job or explaining where you have been, and, or different treatment by the community at large, and so on? Could you elaborate on this?
As a spider.
Both apply. You just imagined, after you've had 3 years of psychiatric treatment, all sorts of environmental influences, impressions from the outside world, have to be adjusted to. You have to get back to doing everyday things, doing the shopping and things like that, if you've spent more or less 3 years in isolation. And of course, I find things very difficult. I've studied to be a social worker, and of course I'm prepared to try and help people. I described this during my placement, that I was dismissed immediately because of the problems that I had, and 3 years of psychiatry, difficult to conceal in a CV.
Different question. One of you mentioned that, I don't remember which one of you mentioned that the psychiatrists coming were males. And you found it significant. Could you elaborate as to why it is significant? Maybe the academic has some statistical or other kind of relevant information on this. And would you think that it would have been different had the psychiatrist treating you were female, or at least the nursing staff was female? And do you find any differences in the ways male and female psychiatrists treated you?
Well, it's a hypothetical question. I can't really answer it. In the nursing sphere, the psychiatrists were all men, and the nursing staff also treated me as being seriously ill. I think in my case, it was the case that my man had me admitted. Other psychiatrists were men. If there had been a woman around, then she might perhaps have been able to understand the background better. The fact is, he didn't have to make any payments. And if I had been given custody of the children, these payments would have been enormous. And I think a woman would have understood me better in that context. I think it's probably less a question of the individual male as psychiatrist or individual woman as psychiatrist. I think it's a question of a structural problem, because women have been depicted a long time as being not rational, or on the rational side, and therefore her activity has been in need of greater proof. On the other story, we know that the image of women suffers. So we have the symptoms here of focused, and lest the background with the violence in her story, that was not put in the forefront, but the way people handle this violence, in a sense, in inverted commas, is that sick people are treated, that by way of a structural complement. And of course, it is distinctly possible that from the point of view of men, they want to preserve and protect things, and that might also apply to psychiatry. Wolf Dieter Nahr is my name. Did you say something about getting legal advice? Because I think it would be appropriate if you could say whether you tried to get legal support, did you get your hands on a lawyer, how did it function? And in the second case, you said that you had contact with a lawyer, but perhaps you could go into more detail on that, how you actually tried to get out of the clinic and what role was played by lawyers in this respect. In my case, on the day I was admitted, I went to a lawyer for family affairs and got what information I could there. No, sorry, that's not correct. I went to a lawyer for family affairs to get an appointment and told the secretary in the office what the situation was and asked for an appointment and was given an appointment for the Tuesday. But on Monday evening, I was admitted. And after a week and a half, one of my friends rang up and I said to this female friend of mine, turn to the lawyer, contact the lawyer, perhaps he can help to get me out. And that's precisely what she did. And the lawyer said, keep your nose out of this. There seems to be something mysterious about this whole affair. That was the initial attempt to get hold of a lawyer. The second attempt was that from inside the clinic, and inside the clinic, it's not easy to telephone, but via a co-patient, I was able to contact a lawyer, rang the lawyer up, and he said, ring me up again this afternoon, and I'll tell you whether you can get an appointment and when that will be. And when I rang him up again in the afternoon, the secretary in the office said, we cannot give you an appointment because you are not capable of engaging in contact of this kind. And I gave up because I said, okay, if you're in a lunatic asylum, then you're no longer capable of acting on your own responsibility. And then I started something else again. Just before Christmas, I wanted to contact somebody else, but she was on holiday. And then another fellow patient told me of another lawyer, and then I rang him up one day before New Year and explained the situation to him. And he said, I will be with you tomorrow. And then he really turned up the next day. That was on the 31st of December. And he promised me that he would get me out within a few days, but that turned out to be 2 weeks in the end. Before he was able to consult the files, that took a little while. And in the meantime, I think I would have been able to leave the clinic without the help of the lawyer.
Their statements illustrate two very basic points. I can be very, very brief. One is what the great American sociologist Irving Goffman called the funnel of betrayal. Mm-hmm. That the process begins by somebody betraying someone else, yeah, with psychiatric words. And what happens next is that an ordinary human event, which is marital conflict, after all, what could be more common than that, becomes transformed into a medical problem. And once that happens, you're finished. So, and then attempts to somehow to correct that gets you deeper and deeper into a hole. Because instead of correcting that problem with explanations, that transformation would have to be undone. But there is not, at present, there is no mechanism for that. And the second point, which is really a continuation of what I just said, is that nothing like these two statements illustrate better that all that rhetoric, every time the word expert is used, a lie is uttered. Because the psychiatrist, this is a conflict. In a conflict like this, there are no experts. This is a so-called zero-sum game. Whatever is decided here, what is good for the husband is bad for the wife. What is good for the wife is bad for the husband. So what can an expert do here? This is not like make a diagnosis of neurodermatitis or something.
Dr. Vatz?
Let me say before I ask you a question that I think that Tom Zaza's statement is so important that I apologize for asking you a question on a different issue, because I think that that issue, that Tom's statement there should be retained. But one question that I almost wish that I could have asked some of the witnesses retroactively, and I would like to ask you, is are there any exceptions? That is, has any of you in your interactions with psychiatrists met any psychiatrists who are antithetical to psychiatric oppression, who have some sort of humility regarding the expertise that they are alleged to have, who believe only in the voluntary interaction of individuals with psychiatrists?
I didn't really understand the question. Second part again.
All of the cases that we have been presented seem to indicate there is uniformity in the oppressive reflex of psychiatrists. And what I'm asking is, has any of you come across any exceptions to this in your interaction with psychiatrists?
Nobody doubted there was any abuse, but they didn't conclude from this that the offender would be brought to justice. But I had a diagnosis imposed upon me, which meant that I had to undergo medical treatment. So it was perfectly normal for them. There was no question at issue. It was not the question afterwards whether I was at danger or should my father be forced to appear before court. It's quite normal that I would be subjected to a diagnosis. I don't know whether it's the answer to your question.
Somebody can reinterpret it better than I, but I'm asking if there are any exceptions to the type of psychiatrists that you have presented that you know about. Are there any exceptions? Are there any psychiatrists who believe only in voluntary interaction with patients who are not oppressive? Have you met any psychiatrists who are exceptions to what the general disposition has been towards psychiatry in this panel?
I can only speak on my own behalf. I think the gods in white coats would be an appropriate term. I wouldn't want to talk in any way about equality of rights in the legal realm. There's the saying in dubio pro re, but that doesn't apply to psychiatry. And for me, psychiatrists are an arrogant bunch who claim to be able to decide about my life. I separate from my husband, and then I'm subjected to a diagnosis which I can't get rid of. So what kind of people are these? Do psychiatrists never get divorced, or what's the situation? When the psychiatrist comes home in the evening and his wife has had a lousy day, then is the wife given a diagnosis or what? Or can he just handle his wife in a normal fashion? In the meantime, are psychiatrists who have a screw loose because they can't treat people normally. They can't accept people for what they really are. Every person is the way that they are, and that's the way they should be taken.
It's a particular issue. But, I mean, I know one psychiatrist who's not like any of you would describe, because he's right here. Tom Zong.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm asking, is he unique?
Well, I just wanted him. Yeah.
Dr. Leifer, there are two.
I'm sorry.
There are some of us, but in general, I agree with you.
I don't hang out with psychiatrists.
My apologies. But,
there is an issue that I would like to clarify for the benefit of whatever audience may be out on the internet, and we understand that there may be a large number of people listening to this, and that is the issue of the psychiatrist's participation in marital conflicts and particularly in custody issues. That is, it's my experience that anyone who has seen a psychiatrist and received, been given a psychiatric diagnosis, or who has been hospitalized and subsequently gets into a marital conflict for custody is at an extreme disadvantage. And I would like to ask you whether you believe that your husband used psychiatry, and it seems that he was very underhanded in the way in which he treated you, not only with respect to the Porsche, but with respect to the hospitalization. Is it your view that he intentionally and with awareness manipulated this situation so that he could get custody of your children? And what is the situation with your children now? Do you have custody?
I think my husband got the appropriate information. I saw internet printouts on manic depression, and in 1997 I did suffer from depression. I think he did it deliberately. In Germany, it's very difficult for a husband, if everything proceeds normally, in inverted commas, and the mother can't be reproached with anything, for getting custody of the children. If he had not had me put into a psychiatric clinic, he would never have had a chance of getting custody of the children. The children are now 8 and 13 years old, and I said just now, they live with him.
I just think that that is such a horrible thing to have happen, and I must say I'm ashamed of my profession that they could participate in such a horror happening to somebody. And I wish you the best of luck in regaining custody of them, and I hope somewhere, wherever you live, that there's a psychiatrist who would come to your defense and that you would be successful in regaining custody of your children.
Get a lawyer.
Kate Miller?
I think it's really hardly a surprise to anyone by now that women are overwhelmingly the victims of psychiatry, something we didn't mention so far, because, of course, men are the victims often too, but we are far more the victims. In fact, they kind of invented psychiatry to get us to behave after we had begun to disbehave. The rise of putting your wife away was a sort of mid-19th century phenomena and real easy to do, but it's still very easy to do. Just lift the phone. I could be committed in 10 minutes. I've already got a record. But if you don't have a record and you're regarded as a good mom, it's very hard to get hold of those kids, but you save a lot of money this way. My elder sister is an attorney, and of course, like most women, attorneys does a lot of divorce work. And she used to say, oh, come on, let the husband have him for a week or so. He'll get sick of it. because, in fact, men use this largely to punish women and to threaten them, not because they really want the kids. But if they've got a new woman who can take care of the kids, then, and if they're really saving a lot of money, maybe it's worth it. When you consider that we do all this unpaid, they might have to pay someone who would be a nanny or something, you know, perhaps they can get a deal out of this, you know. So that we have to ask ourselves, cui bono, who benefits from this calling you crazy? And it's one person's word against another, and you see how easy it is to denounce. He could do it with a Porsche car. And then some fantastic tale that you'd bought land. In other words, if you spent, that's a big sign of manic depression. Happiness is too, so try to avoid it. Also, gleefulness, joy, euphoria, terrible things. Do not demonstrate them. But it is, of course, a Kafkaesque situation, because if you're depressed, if you've been deprived of your own children, well, cheer up, look good. Because then, you know, you're sick on the other side.
So and Kafka anticipated so much of this, and now we live it. And I'm very sorry that all these years you have been... How many years since your children were taken from you?
Anderthalb Jahre jetzt. 524.
1.5 years. 525 days.
Half. 1.5 years. So more than 500 days.
And I think that... Can you sue for slander when you've been called crazy? For libel? What can we do
about
this?
Expert, not if it's expert testimony. That's Tom's point. That's the root of some of the problems, that when you have expert testimony and you're speaking as a physician, it can't be slandered.
Can't you get another physician to say she's sane as can be?
Yes. She got one.
The difficulty, speaking as one lawyer that's resident to this hearing, while both of those torts generally exist, they've been made extremely difficult to use effectively.
Well, let's get on it. Now, there are ways, really, and the law is one
ways.
Of the ways
there
we have.
Ways.
And the other thing I wanted to say is that not only men put their wives away and get rid of them this way and declare their authority, and all of patriarchy declares its authority over women every time we're called crazy, nuts, and all the rest of it. But also, here is a child who has been abused, an incest victim, and she too is made further a victim and guilty and spends 3 years tied down. I cannot think of anything more unjust or hideous than this, that the victim be punished for what is actually even a legal crime, and she has to bear the brunt of it, and then is physically pinioned for large periods of time. There is no other word but torture for that.
Paulo Coelho, Kate, in the name of the Mayo community, I would like to remember you that 2 weeks ago, it was a husband that was locked up because his wife wanted to get rid of it.
The rare case.
Okay.
May I add a small historical point to reinforce Kate's point? And it is really belaboring the obvious. A few years after the Civil War ended in America, around 1870, the state of Illinois enacted a law which said, and I quote almost verbatim, that a husband may commit his wife to a lunatic asylum without any evidence of mental illness. End of quote.
And the first fighter for mental patient liberation was a woman in the Middle West who spent her whole life on it. So that this is for us such an old issue. And I recommend that you look at Elaine Showalter's book, which is called For Her Own Good, and it's a history of women
and
psychiatry.
And of course, this whole story goes then also back to the witch hunts, which were more clearly males against females. Although there again, there were a few males who were convicted as witches.
Faggots.
Mr. Mabby.
Mir scheint ein wichtiger Hinweis.
I think this is an important indication. When verifying these statements, both witnesses told us that they had gone to psychiatrists on a voluntary basis. Wouldn't this have been a clue in your case, for example, or with your husband, that your husband then referred to it? If you hadn't been to the psychiatrist, would you imagine that some such things would have happened?
If I hadn't been in the clinic for a depression in 1996, he wouldn't have had a chance if I'd not have been striking. Why did you go to the psychiatrist earlier? I spent 5 weeks in a psychiatric clinic in 1997. At that stage, I was helped. It was a good clinic. I chose it myself. 5 weeks holiday at the cost of the statutory house funds. And the reason why I had depression in the first place was that my marriage was on the rocks. A year ago, there was a student here at the university in Berlin. The woman is now 31 years of age. She was undergoing psychiatric treatment, and she got herself released. But things became clear in the course of a couple of days. What the woman had experienced. She is perfectly normal. She studied under me, and I can understand why her mother today understands her. She asked me to talk to her mother because her mother had to call the doctor or the psychiatrist. I didn't know exactly what the situation was myself. And the woman then gave a lecture for me on sources of philosophy. This is an important subject, and I wanted to know from the psychiatrist whether the woman was capable of handling a subject of this kind. I thought the situation was yes. But then what's the matter with the woman? I asked, given the fact that she's normal. And he said to me, when we were together, that in Germany there is a kind of ritual. And this ritual consists of people who like to harm others. And the ritual involves people who are invisible. You can't see them. But when you notice that somebody isn't fitting with society in a way, then they try to do everything they possibly can to exclude that person, to segregate that person. That was her problem. So I said, okay, if you tell somebody else that, what's the reaction? If I say this, he said, then you belong in a lunatic asylum. And I said, well, don't report that to anybody else. Therefore, I want to know whether she had any other experiences which could be deemed as being deviant behavior in society.
Well, I have a few comments and one question. And first of all, I would like to comment that I doubt whether it would have helped you that you haven't been hospitalized in 97, because as we can learn from all the testimonies, it's very easy to make any one of us crazy. So, I mean, if your husband would have liked to put you away, I mean, he could have found a way to make you crazy somehow. So that's my first comment. Now, the second one is following what Kate was saying, and of course I agree with every word you said, Kate. I think that we should emphasize the fact that we are talking about weaker people, weaker groups that psychiatry can finish or can destroy or can treat or can do whatever they want in these processes. So we are talking about women that are, as a group, as a collective, weaker than men. We are talking about children that are patronized or treated by adults, and it's very easy also to put them into psychiatric hospitals. We are talking about other groups that are easily treated. We are talking, I mentioned yesterday, the example of the German, of the Jews, Jews that survived the Holocaust and came to Israel, which were put away into the psychiatric hospitals, and so on and so on. So I think that it is important that we emphasize that we are talking about the social structure of power, and how psychiatry really plays into this kind of game. And now I have another comment which really troubles me very much in what all we heard here in these 2 days, that such horrible things are going on and on and on, and the surrounding society is really silent. I mean, nothing really is done. So we were asking about lawyers. Where is the lawyer? Where is this? Where is that? But I mean, how can it happen? And these horrible things are going on, and the surrounding society is really doing nothing. I mean, this is something so very awful. And my question is to the two of you. Well, you were in psychiatric hospitals and were treated by psychiatrists and so on. So I have this discussion with Alon, about the very important role of the psychiatrists or the psychiatric hospitals, at least in one issue, in prevention of suicide. So I would like to hear from you. Do you really think that these places are good in preventing suicide attempts?
Get that your hands.
No.
Nah.
Vielleicht kann ich ergänzend.
Perhaps I could just add something to this. I don't think psychiatry is in a position to prevent attempts at suicide because psychiatry emphasizes that there is no help to you. So there's additional despair as a result.
Geht das hier mit dem Mikro?
Yeah. Is this mic working?
Excuse me. For suicide, let me throw in a small bomb. Several years ago, I wrote a book on this, but I've been writing about this too for over 40 years. We refuse to ask a simple question in society. And speaking of the silence, which is a very good point, this pertains to it. Should suicide be a basic human right? Because it took many, many years of human history for suicide to cease to be a theological wrong. Mm-hmm. It took many more years for it to be a legal wrong. As recently as 1820, a man in England who tried to kill himself by slashing his throat was sentenced to die and was rehanged unsuccessfully, despite the doctor saying that he'll be able to breathe through his trachea. Doctors then sewed up his wound and he was hanged again because the penalty for attempted suicide, unsuccessful suicide, was death. The penalty for unsuccessful suicide is now psychiatric death, enforced by the legal profession, the medical profession, the psychiatric profession, and the American Civil Liberties Union, and so on and so on. It seems to me that until we are willing to bite the bullet and say that suicide can be unfortunate, may not be unfortunate under appropriate circumstances. In any case, it may or may not be a tragedy, but whatever it is, it's not a disease like diphtheria, and it's not any business of any doctor or any psychiatrist or any civil society. If you are religious and you commit suicide, you go to hell. If you don't believe in religion, you don't go to hell. And that's the end of it. Now, until we bite that bullet, that book, by the way, was nowhere even mentioned. That was total. That book I wrote called Fatal Freedom, The Ethics and Politics of Suicide, was nowhere reviewed, nowhere mentioned. The subject is totally unmentionable.
Yeah.
But now you say the word suicide and everybody goes crazy. Yeah.
Maybe it explains why the Romans didn't have psychiatry or medieval Japan either.
May I add a word on that and address it to you, George? As a psychiatrist in private practice, I experience this vulnerability that if a patient complains to me about suicide and I do nothing, I am vulnerable to being sued and having everything I own taken away from me.
Naturally, the issue of suicide is controversial. I think that efforts should be made to prevent people from committing suicide. This would, I didn't think was controversial, but obviously, suicide very often is a tragic thing which should be prevented.
But it's extremely important to emphasize that suicide is spitting in the face of Judaism and Christianity.
It's
against these two religions.
Ich möchte die Mitglieder der Jury dringend bitten, von Statements längerer Art.
perhaps I could ask you not to keep your statements as concise as possible so that the witnesses here and the other ones we're about to hear get enough air. So, but if you're all making your statements, then I'm going to say I agree with much that Thomas said, but not everything. Please, let's ask questions, but not make any more statements.
A mess here with about four different people wanting to speak at the same time. Yes, Ron, you could lose your fortune under those circumstances. We'll talk about it later. I'll give you my card. In the meantime, there's a person from the audience who wants to speak.